Today's show is a combination of an interview, a conversation, and a bit more information about an upcoming course that you might be interested in. I'm being interviewed by James Booten, who's with Process Work International. In partnership with them, the course I'm running in September is called Interpreting and Understanding Sexuality, Kinks, and Fetishes. It's primarily pitched at therapists, and a link is in the show notes and also on the Curious Creatures website. There's some cool stuff in this conversation. We start with my story about how I came to be here, about all the ways that psychologies do mix together well and don't mix together well, the things that stop people that are exploring their sexuality from talking about it with their therapist, and a bunch of other stuff relating to sex positivity, including that age-old question of how much sex is a healthy amount and how do you find your healthy amount. I'm glad to be putting this out as well, because aside from the content, I've been getting questions from folks who want to do the course I just mentioned, but who don't know if they've got enough foundational understanding in psychology and in process-oriented psychology in particular. Sorry about that. I think I've actually might have confused some folks. Doing this interview has reminded me that I really won't be getting all that deep into the woods on those items. So I reckon if you can follow along with what is being discussed here, and if the subject material is of interest, then the upcoming course is for you. Also, just lastly, depending on when you listen to this, there's still time to book into the live recording of what is effectively an extra episode of the Pan Political series. That is coming up on Saturday the 5th of July, Australia time. And I think I'll just go right ahead and slip the ad in right here, and then we'll get into the interview with James. I'm recording a live show, and I'd love to have you there. It's going to be for a follow-up episode to this Pan Political series, where I'll be putting out some additional content and responding to some feedback that I've received, including your questions and comments on the day. It'll be somewhere between a workshop and a presentation, meaning you'll have the opportunity to chat with other listeners about your thoughts in the series, and it'll be a bit interactive. It'll be a nice, chilled-out way to hang out with me and some other interesting listeners for a couple of hours. It'll be by Zoom, so you don't even need to leave home, on the morning of Saturday the 5th of July 2025 in Australia time, which is the evening of Friday the 4th of July in US time. It's really cheap, around $15 or $20, and even cheaper if you're a Patreon member. Links are in the show notes for this live recording and also on the Curious Creatures website. Like I say, I'd love to see you there and to meet you.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this conversation. I'm just so excited to be having today with Raj Butler about his upcoming course, A Therapist's Guide to Sexuality, Taboos, and Kink. My name is James Booten. I am the certificate coordinator of the Process Work Institute in Portland, Oregon, in the United States, and I'm also going to be the course host for this course. I just want to extend a huge welcome to Raj here. I'm really excited to be talking to you about some of these issues. Hi, Raj, and welcome.
Hey, James, and hello, everyone. Great to be here.
So I'd love to start off with the most perhaps obvious question, which is, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your history with this topic and what's gotten you into this supporting therapists with these things, sexuality, taboos, and kink? Those are big topics for people.
Great. Sure. I've been studying process work for about 25 years, sort of varying capacities and intensities at various times, as you do. And I guess about 15, maybe 20 years ago, through following my process, I made the decision to lean in a little more to my own sexuality and sex education. And that's a world which I explored a little in my earlier mid-20s, but it let slide. So then when I got back into that world, I found myself running workshops for others on how to safely explore and pursue their own sexual interests. And at first that was just a sort of a spontaneous, wouldn't this be fun to do kind of thing. And then I gradually took my role as a sex educator more seriously. And also found that although I hadn't realized it at first, I was very much bringing a lot of the world of process work into the world of sex education. They're a very beautiful pair, and there's a lot that we know about congruency and subtle signal sets and so forth as process workers that actually makes for a stunningly useful model of consent and sexual exploration. Oh, wow. So I gradually lent more into that and wound up offering about 20 or 30 different workshops to something like 20,000 people over the course of 12 years. So that became quite a thing. And now my interest in that is I've slowed down what you might call frontline teaching, and I'm interested in bridging the gap in the other direction back towards therapists. So one of the things I observed as a sex educator and as someone within the, let's say, sex positive community is that there's a lot of tension around how to bring matters of sexuality up with therapists and how that interaction goes and how the responses that one gets as a client can be empowering and liberating or devastating. And I also know that from the therapist side of the equation, these areas are really challenging in terms of what's normal, what's healthy, in the interest of doing no harm. How do we support these endeavors in our clients when we ourselves might not be specialists in that area? Yeah, all of those thoughts and all of that journey has brought us to this course.
Wow. I have to say, I've been studying process work for about 6 years now, and I don't think I've actually had exposure to this overlapping of a process work paradigm with these types of topics, sexuality and taboo and kink. And I just get excited hearing you talk about it and the way that that flows into consent. And yeah, it makes a lot of sense that it would be hard for therapists to navigate these things. Is there more that you'd like to say about who's an ideal student in this course? Who's going to come to this course? What are they thinking about? What are they hoping to gain? Who's going to be the person who's going to really benefit the most from this kind of course?
Yeah, great. I think who is going to benefit from this course is both practitioners and their clients. But who this course for is principally just practitioners. So therapists, counselors, psychologists, essentially anyone that's working in a psychological capacity with clients, presumably on a one-on-one basis. And specifically, it's therapists who it doesn't matter if a therapist has any specific interest in these topics. So, by these topics, just generally exploring sexuality beyond what the mainstream might regard as a normal level of exploration. So, that includes, yeah, sex positivity, the kinks, the fetishes, the taboos, little small references to non-monogamy or polyamory and sex work, and a few other side topics like that. But, yeah, for any clients leaning in, where their therapist wants to be able to support them in that journey, but where the therapist might not have any interest in those topics themselves. So I know a lot of therapists feel a little stuck or a little unsure or not sure how to proceed down that path. And some of that can be put down to there are ethics and standards we have as therapists about. There's a line of how much material relating to sexuality is ethical and appropriate to go into with a client. And there's an incredible gulf between the worlds because where that ethical line is amongst the community of people that are exploring and leaning into their sexuality is often a lot more progressive, a lot more detailed, a lot more graphic, and a lot more specific than what most of us as therapists are used to and are comfortable with. And so when we have a reaction of, oh, this feels like unethical territory, on some level, our clients will pick that up. Even though it's not necessarily the case, we're not necessarily casting judgment on their pursuits. We're just not sure of what the level of comfort and safety is in the clinical room. So, yeah, tackling some of those questions and also getting down to real specifics around what does actually make for healthy, empowering, positive practice from someone that's pursuing their sexuality. And how does that differ from dangerous, trauma reinforcing, let's say, negative pursuits? Because from the outside of these communities, it can be extremely hard to tell that difference. And again, we're mostly just bringing in very familiar process-oriented methods to be client-oriented and watching feedback signals. Yeah.
You're describing, I think, a challenging territory for many reasons that therapists maybe struggle to do. There's these ethical concerns, there's maybe concerns about danger and safety. Are there other things that make it really hard for a therapist to work with this material?
Yeah, funny. Just as you were speaking, I was thinking of perhaps an example that some people might relate to a little bit is that the non-therapeutic mainstream community might have regarded, say, gay and lesbian relationships as taboo territory. Unfortunately, for some people in the world, that's still very much a current issue. If I can speak from a Western perspective, that's thankfully more of a historical issue. There's a lot more awareness around the psychology community of the normalcy of different sexual orientations. But that's perhaps a good example that most of us are familiar with about how that unfolded over time, which is simply that clients that thought they may have been gay or lesbian or were, would just keep that part of themselves out of the therapeutic room. And we know that was not advantageous for those clients. So perhaps if you fast forward a little bit, perhaps we're in a similar situation there. So that's just a thought I was having about how this fits in. To your question, James, around what also might make it hard. Yeah, an answer that comes to mind is, as therapists, we're not actually perfect, enlightened creatures who have no edges, no blind spots, and no issues. But in every other way, we manage ourselves in the room. On the week where we're having financial issues, every client that comes in wants to work on their finances. And on the week that we're breaking up with a partner, every client wants to work on their breakup stuff. So too with our own relationship to our own sexual history, perhaps our own sexual trauma, perhaps experiments that we've run in the past around sexual adventures that haven't worked out well. All of those things are up for us. So those things can make it tricky to relate to clients who are leaning into their own sex education. Yeah, I think that can make it tricky. And I really understand the tendency on some level to have a response of might be best just to leave that alone a little bit.
I imagine that happens all the time. Just stay away. We'll put it over there. We'll talk about it later. But I wonder, in your experience, what happens when we do that too much? What happens when we ignore discussions about sex for too long or just outright?
Great. I love the question, and I love it also because we can look at that question from the perspective of what happens when we, as individual therapists, ignore those questions or those interests from our clients. You can also look at it from the perspective of what happens when we culturally ignore the community that is exploring that is exploring those things. And it's the same. The absence of sex education and support does not a good life make. So, when we don't have access to education and support, the interests and the urges and the desires, even if not just the desire on more of a sexual gratification level, the desire to work through the cultural mess that is sexuality, the desire to work through the archetypes that we've picked up or inherited around sexual roles of predation and victimhood. There's just so much in the world of sexuality. So we are going to keep exploring those things no matter what, whether we're educated and supported or not. However, when we don't have education and support around it, in the 20,000 people that I've taught, I don't witness good outcomes. It's a hit and miss process. So yeah, I think I absolutely respect individual therapists' needs sometimes to say, I love that you're exploring this. This might not be an area for me. So we need therapists as ba sorry, we need boundaries as therapists also. However, yeah, particularly if we can't point people in useful directions or if we just shut them down, then clients will run experiments. They'll drop little tests into the therapeutic space just to see what kind of response they're going to get if they were to reveal the entirety of their interests. And they run little tests. And if they don't get a good response, then they just go underground. They keep those things down. And it gets to the point where it's as it was in the 70s for gay and lesbian people who shared lists of therapists that were on board and open-minded to those topics. And again, unfortunately, still for many people in many places in the world. So too it is within the sexuality communities these days. People circulate lists of therapists that are open-minded to these topics, and people even have, you might say people even have affairs sometimes where they've got their principal therapist who they work with on everything. Asterisks, and the asterisk is when I'm working on sexuality and kink stuff, I've got this other therapist that I see on the side. And I'm deliberately using that language because it is how it feels. It's, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the way you describe that. I the you know they our clients do run little tests on us. They check us out, and it's I don't know if it's reasonable to say this, but it does seem a little bit hard to come by, like honest, authentic instruction around these things. And I think that what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is that this is we're going to explore our sexual impulses one way or the other. And it's just so supportive to be a little bit more facilitated in some awareness around what's happening and how can we navigate it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. It's a harm mitigation and management approach as opposed to just trying to shut an entire operation down.
Beautiful. Are there some examples that you could give of where and how you've seen kind of therapists navigate this in less helpful ways? Where do therapists get this kind of stuff wrong?
Yeah, I think, thank you. Love the question. Firstly, to be understanding and compassionate towards therapists. Something I've observed is that a lot of the time when, if a therapist is not a part of the sexual exploring community, let's say, most of the exposure, almost all of the exposure they get to that community is when things go wrong. So when a client comes in and says, "Hey, I was exploring whatever, insert whatever kink or fetish or community here, and it went horribly, devastatingly wrong." It's a little, you see this story also a little with people that explore polyamory. They have a bad relationship with a person, and therapists only ever see the bad side of that. Never mind that there are some monogamous relationships that also break up and go wrong, but we don't tend to take the same perspective. So I'm very understanding and compassionate for the fact that as a therapist, it can look like a mess. And it can look like a community if you've only heard the bad parts of it, which is essentially perpetrators masquerading as skillful players, something like that. I can very much understand the skepticism around all of those communities. When you've only heard the bad stories, when people have only come to you when things have gone wrong, it can be very hard to understand the worth. And in the course itself, we'll be opening with a pretty decent exploration of why people actually explore these communities. And there's a lot of therapeutic and beneficial therapy that goes on with these communities and these types of play when things are done well. I'm running a course called A Therapist's Guide to Sexuality, Taboos, and Kink with Process Work International. It's designed with therapists in mind, by which I mean any one-to-one practitioner who wants to know more about the world of sexuality so as to be able to better support your clients that are exploring that world. It'll tackle a whole bunch of juicy topics like how to pick positively and therapeutically beneficial forms of play from ones that might be damaging or concerning. It addresses why people pursue these areas of interest in the first place. And what you can do to support them towards safe and well-paced experimentation, even if you yourself have got little or no interest in such things. The course is pitched at therapists of various descriptions, but will also be of relevance to people seeking a solid grounding in best practice exploration of their sexuality. It runs for 3 2-hour sessions by Zoom, starting on September the 9th, 2025. Links are in the show notes. And also on the Curious Creatures website. Love to see you there. So I can understand why therapists are skeptical or from a do no harm perspective, just have massive alarm bells over the entire community. That actually makes sense and is an appropriate response, sadly. However, yeah, we tend to miss the ways that I just alluded to, that incredibly good therapy, psychotherapy happens within kink communities when it's done well. And as for a specific example, I can think of a couple actually that I'm just smushed together for convenience and anonymity. So the example is of someone who is leaning into their sexual explorations. They're living what some would regard as a promiscuous life with some sexual activities and practices that are adventurous and they've opened that conversation up with a therapist, and the therapist has understandably but mistakenly assumed that there will be damage and harm coming from those practices, particularly since the client has an abuse history of their own. And so the therapist has gone to the conclusion of that this must be re-traumatization. There has to be some harm happening here, and has ushered them away from those practices. That person has then gotten into more of a one-on-one relationship of a, should we say, I don't want to say sedate, because that carries a lot of judgment with it. Let's just say more of a one-on-one ongoing relationship with much less sexual exploration and just some more what are sometimes regarded as vanilla practices. And the therapist missed that those practices were awful just because they happen to fit what's generally sanctioned as more normal, and they're less of an obvious alarm bell around those things. But the client's subtle signals of consent in that situation, or rather the subtle signals of lack of consent that those practices were not great, were missed. Did that make sense as an example? As I say, I've brought together two there, so it might have been a little confusing.
I think it makes a lot of sense. It really leads me to this. I keep thinking, like, as a person who practices a sort of alternative to therapy, who works with clients who are thinking
Right.
about things, it leads me to my own question of, I often feel this sense of, can I support a lived experience that I'm not sure that I know? It makes me wonder about whether therapists have to be into the, do we need that level of experience, personal experience, to understand what's going on for another person? And do I, as somebody who is a practitioner, need to have my own sexual trauma managed to navigate this? Or am I going to just project some of my own stuff onto what might be going on with my clients?
Haha, I love it. The first question first. Do you as a therapist need to have knowledge or interest in these areas in order to be useful? No, quite the opposite. I think you can bring in your beginner's mind as a therapist to be like a blank slate to openly explore and find out about topics and just be really transparent about saying, oh, I love that we're exploring this. It's not personally an area I have experience with, which is also great in terms of keeping your personal life out of the room. I would love to explore it with you and find out more about you. And in straight away doing that, you're demonstrating openness and curiosity, and you're also helping the client to explore it from scratch, because clients are moving into worlds, communities, events, relationships where there's a lot of assumptions around what's done and why we do it and how we do it. And a lot of that stuff needs to be questioned, needs to be opened up. So actually, as a person, as a support, as a therapist who doesn't know a lot about that world and those communities, you're in a position to ask beautiful beginner questions. And in the same way that we know in the rest of therapy, actually, I don't know about we, I shouldn't speak on behalf of all therapists. For myself as a therapist, if I have a client who presents with a situation or a circumstance which I think I know something about, sometimes that can be really useful because sometimes I know their process and I can jump ahead several steps down the path and lead them much more quickly, so long as I'm watching their feedback like a hawk. Because the risk with a situation like that, someone comes in with an issue which I think I know something about, I lock onto that as an idea and I start missing where they want to go with the situation. So there's like a benefit and a risk to already being part of a community. And yeah, I'm not in a position to say which is better. I would definitely weigh in and say that if a therapist doesn't have any interest in these communities or these practices, that does absolutely not disqualify them. Let me see if I can say that with less double negatives. Therapists are absolutely in a position to support clients regardless of their own level of interest in sexuality, sex positivity, kink, fetish, taboo, etc. It's just the same as in anything else. It's, what about that experience stands out for you? I see there's some charge around that. What's that relate to? I don't quite understand. Or I see there's some passion and lots of smiles on your face. What about that experience makes you smile? So just our usual approaches as therapists. We know nothing, but let's find out. And then, so I think that was your first question. Your second question was, how do we go when we've got our own history? Yeah, I think it's like everything. This is one of the things, one of the many things I love so much about process-oriented psychology is my training in it gave me a lot of awareness around trying to be aware of when I've got blind spots or when I have something that's come up in the room which has got charge for me personally or energy for me personally. And so I think the general modus operandi in those situations is that we do our best to be mindful about what's coming up for us. Sometimes there's utility in bringing it into the room. Like I notice as you talk about that, it brings up for me my experiences around blah, blah, blah. And I just need to name that so that it's out of the way. Or maybe we're naming it so as to invite something in. Yeah, so I think it's all of the usual things, but I hope this is an appropriate joke to make. If it was not possible for us to offer therapy in the world of sexuality unless we're perfect creatures who have worked through all of our own sexual history, then there'd be no sexual therapy in this world. Because there's pretty much no one that doesn't have some level of history.
Yeah, I love how you speak to these different levels, this world level, this reality that we're in, the culture that we live in, the histories that we have, and also this personal need for exploration and understanding of these desires. And I especially love the way you frame it. It is common, at least in my training, right? Let's explore together. I don't maybe know that experience as well, but let's explore. And just so nice to have that re-underlined. Oh yeah, that can be appropriate here too.
Yes, great. I'm glad that comes across. And I want to also add to that, I think that as process-oriented therapists who have a keen enthusiasm for subtle signals of in the world of process work, whether the feedback is on or off or something like that, what we can bring to the world of sexuality and pursuits of sexuality is a level of expertise around consent, which is absolutely world class. Even if we ourselves have never applied it into the world of sexuality, I see the world of sexuality and sex positivity desperately trying to find language and models to pursue better models of consent. And process work is sitting there with, in my opinion, the world's best model that I've seen. So, what I call congruent
Good.
consent. So you can see, I've just totally taken that from psychology and process work. Compared to we're in the process at the moment of popularizing the idea of enthusiastic consent. And I love enthusiastic consent as a model compared to the way consent normally plays out in the world, which is can be a bit iffy. But yeah, the idea of congruent consent makes enthusiastic consent look like entry level.
You just blew my mind, Raj. I love that. I love that so much. I can't even express to you how much I love that because I think I've had that inclination myself. Like, yeah, because we are so about the signals, right? And the feedback. And but nobody said it that way for me before, that this is a world-class model potentially for navigating this consent territory. That's profound to me. I appreciate that framing. I get excited about that.
I think that was approximately the moment about 10 years ago where I realized that I was bringing process work into sex education and that they went really well together. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that's a golden marriage.
Okay. Beautiful. One more question on my end, which is a question I sometimes get in client work that I do, which is there a correct amount of sex that we should be having, or a certain style, a certain way we should be having sex? What do you th How do you respond to a question like that?
No.
Okay.
I should probably expand on that
Say
a
more.
little bit.
We have ideas about this though, right? We have ideas about we should be having this much or we shouldn't be having that much.
We have a lot of ideas around that. I have a model which is a little easier to think about in terms of relationship models and relationship structures, because you can ask the same question. Is there a kind of a correct model of relationship that people should be having? Is there a desire we should, sorry, is there a particular structure that we should be aiming for or desiring? Whether that's in the world of monogamy or whether that's in the world of non-monogamy, the same thing happens within the non-monogamous community. There is often an assumption of a certain type of model of relationship that we should be having, a certain amount of openness or whatever. I'll circle around sexuality in just a second. I think it's a game between any two people that meet of just trying to work out, can you crack the code to the perfect amount, the perfect style for you? So that's frequency of contact. Do we merge economics? Are we thinking about kids living together? All of those sorts of questions. They're all questions that, in a perfect world, we'd be starting from scratch with each person and just seeing if we can find the perfect model for us. Yeah, as I've said, it's as true in non-monogamy as it is in monogamy, because I think that the two main models of those two worlds actually don't fit many people. Almost everyone's trying to find some kind of weird, bespoke, unique model to them. So too it is, I think, with sexuality. We have We live in a world which is extremely prescriptive in terms of how much sex you should be having, who you should be having it with, how much pleasure you should be allowed to be getting from it, and so on and so forth. Definitely, we talk about this more in the course. That model is sometimes described as a model of sex negativity. So there's a lot of people saying what you can and can't do, and all of it's almost all of it is shrouded in a lot of negativity, a lot of you're doing it wrong. In contrast to that, a sex positive approach says that so long as it's between consenting people, including just with yourself, then fine. And maybe with a nod to safety somewhere in the mix as well. But the essential model is just that so long as it's between consenting people, and I would add, so long as it's being between congruently consenting people, then great. There's a couple of caveats there. And the main one I want to speak to, because people will often assume that sex educators are in favor of sex and think that everyone should be having sex. I do not think that is the case. So, in the same way that we're all looking for a unique relationship and a unique style of sex, that has to include what's sometimes called asexuality, so the choice or to not have sex, whether that's for this 5 minute period of time or whether it's for this five lifetime section of time, depending on your perspective. If that's the right pattern and pace and style for you, then fantastic. And someone else might have half a dozen very high-level partners and be dot. I don't want to colour people's perspectives, so I'll let folks insert their own idea of what a high level of sex is. If their signals around that are congruent, then perhaps that's right for them. And if someone never wants to go near sex ever, then perhaps that's right for them. And I think that as therapists, it's our role to, if a client has brought their level, let's just say level of sexual activity, if they think they're having too much or too little or something like that to us, then with curiosity and openness, we explore that. We don't know at the start of the session where we're going to wind up with that person's process. We don't know what they're trying to get to. We just follow the energy, follow the hot spots, take note of the flat spots and see if we can support the client to get there. But yeah, I personally absolutely definitely do not have any sense of the, I don't even want to say correct amount of sex, correct amount of relating, correct amount of partners, correct amount of humans.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the insight. I have to say, just listening to you, I'm appreciating how much groundedness you bring to this conversation and clarity and obvious experience. It really helps me in my own thinking around some of these things. Are there any last thoughts that you'd like to add? Anything else you'd like people to know who might be considering this class about you or the content or the topic?
Thanks. And I guess just thanks to folks for being interested in this area. And in particular, if it's, I mean, I think that this course will appeal to people who are of both worlds, so are a part of sexuality communities and are also therapists. I think this will appeal to them in terms of there'll be probably aspects of this that will be relieving or a sense of solidarity or peerhood or something like that. However, there'll be a chunk of people who are not a part of the sexual exploring community, but who are therapists and who are interested in this stuff and this interview from the perspective of their clients. So, a decent degree of that essentially is community service. And I just want to say thank you to that level of interest. It's appreciated.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time today, Raj, and for your insights. Just want to say one more time, if you're interested, if you're a therapist who's navigating some of these issues and would like to know more, Therapist Guide to Sexuality, Taboos, and Kink will be hosted at the Proselwork Institute. I think it's three core. Yeah, it's 3 2-hour courses in September. So look out for that. And thanks so much, Raj. I really appreciate this for your time and for your insight for today.
Very welcome. Thank you, James. I'm recording a live show, and I'd love to have you there. It's going to be for a follow-up episode to this pan-political series, where I'll be putting out some additional content, and responding to some feedback that I've received, including your questions and comments on the day. It'll be somewhere between a workshop and a presentation, meaning you'll have the opportunity to chat with other listeners about your thoughts in the series, and it'll be a bit interactive. It'll be a nice, chilled out way to hang out with me and some other interesting listeners for a couple of hours. It'll be by Zoom, so you don't even need to leave home, on the morning of Saturday the 5th of July 2025 in Australia time, which is the evening of Friday the 4th of July in US time. It's really cheap, around 15 or 20 bucks, and even cheaper if you're a Patreon member. Links are in the show notes for this live recording and also on the Curious Creatures website. Like I say, I'd love to see you there and to meet you. How about that capitalism, huh? I want to talk with you about a weird way that capitalism is actually kind of functional. It's to do with this podcast. Firstly, I want to stress it's okay for you to just listen to this and not contribute. I say just listen because it's not nothing. By just listening to it, you're engaging with my material, you're probably having chats about it with others, and really, that's all I'm doing this for. I can tell that you are there because I can see you in the total number of downloads, and it means a lot to me. This relationship works for me. It's okay to just listen. At the same time, I know that some of you want to show a more active level of support and are in a position to do so. This is where capitalism comes into it and doesn't actually do a half bad job. I've set up a Patreon page, which, in short, is an easy way for you to contribute. And it's very meaningful to me. I used to be skeptical about paying for podcasts, but eventually I had to ask myself how it differs from paying for books, or for videos, or for workshops, or for therapy, all of which I pay for pretty consistently. And this, my friends, is my version of a book, or a workshop, or a whatever. So I feel okay about asking for a donation through Patreon, if you're in a position to do so, and this has been meaningful for you. So the link is in the show notes and also on the Curious Creatures website. If you're not in a position to contribute, please don't feel guilty about listening to this for free. I appreciate you, and I appreciate having you on this ride with me. I'm running a course called A Therapist's Guide to Sexuality, Taboos, and Kink with Process Work International. It's designed with therapists in mind, by which I mean any one-to-one practitioner who wants to know more about the world of sexuality so as to be able to better support your clients that are exploring that world. It'll tackle a whole bunch of juicy topics, like how to pick positively and therapeutically beneficial forms of play from ones that might be damaging or concerning. It addresses why people pursue these areas of interest in the first place, and what you can do to support them towards safe and well-paced experimentation, even if you yourself have got little or no interest in such things. The course is pitched at therapists of various descriptions, but will also be of relevance to people seeking a solid grounding in best practice exploration of their sexuality. It runs for 3 2-hour sessions by Zoom, starting on September the 9th, 2025. Links are in the show notes, and also on the Curious Creatures website. Love to see you there.